David Kilcullen says most counterinsurgency efforts fail because a foreign army simply galvanizes opposition from the local people. These locals join the insurgency not as ideologues. They just want to defend their land and their customs from the foreign invader. Kilcullen calls these locals accidental guerrillas. It's also the title of his new book. Now, Kilcullen's no dove. He's been an on-the-ground military officer in Indonesia, East Africa, and the Philippines. He's also been an advisor to former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and was a top military advisor to General Petraeus during the troop surge in Iraq. He's currently an informal advisor to the Obama administration in Afghanistan. Kilcullen told Ann Strangchamps that the accidental guerrilla makes up some 90% of a typical insurgency.
I looked in detail at about a dozen conflicts around the world that are currently happening. And what I found was that in each case, there's a very small proportion of people that we're engaged in fighting who are genuine enemies of the West who would be coming after us regardless of whether we were there or not. But the vast majority of people, numerically and in terms of the number of incidents, are what I call accidental guerrillas. They're people who are fighting us primarily because we're there. They're fighting us because we went to their valley or their village or to their country to deal with this very small enemy group. And so there's a real threat out there, but actually a lot of the people we're fighting don't belong to that threat group. They're people who are pushing back against us coming into their environment.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I use an example in the Afghan chapter of the book about a big firefight in Oruzgan province in May of 2006, where a Taliban group ambushed a U.S. Special Forces patrol, and the patrol was pinned down for about 6 hours in the bottom of a valley because local villagers who'd been working in the fields went home, got their weapons, and came back and joined in the fight. And after the fight, we talked to people and said, well, we didn't think that you supported the Taliban, so why were you shooting at us? And they said, well, we actually don't support the Taliban. But, you know, this firefight that just happened in our valley, this is the most exciting thing that's happened here for 10 years. And it would have been dishonorable for us to sit that fight out and not take part in it. And if you're going to take up arms and be part of a fight, you're not going to intervene on the side of the infidel foreigner. You're going to intervene on the side of the Afghan. So we felt like we had no choice. And there are countless other examples in the book from Iraq, southern Thailand, Indonesia, the Horn of Africa, Pakistan, a variety of other places to demonstrate that this isn't, you know, the US's fault. It isn't anything to do with the nature of Muslim society or backward society. It's just human nature that when you wade into somebody else's local environment and start smacking heads together, you generate a response, which is a backlash.
Let's talk about how some of these ideas played out in Iraq. You were the architect of the general framework for General Petraeus' troop surge in 2007. Why didn't that troop surge create thousands more accidental guerrillas?
That's exactly right. You know, extra troops can be a good thing or a bad thing. And the numbers of troops were not the cause of success in Iraq in 2007. It was what they did when they got there. So we previously had been adopting what I would call a repetitive raiding approach, where we would surge into an area, chase the bad guys, kill as many as we could find, do a significant amount of damage to the local population in that process, and then we'd sit there for a while and we'd try and talk people into being part of our sort of development programs and governance programs and so on. And most people would be too frightened to engage, but a few would come and work with us and take part in those programs, and they were generally the sorts of people that supported the international community. And then after a period of time, something else would happen somewhere else, and we would pick up and leave. And of course, then the enemy would come back and kill those people. And so what we were actually doing was systematically killing off all the people in the Iraqi society that were willing to work with us. And we'd go back to that environment again and we'd say, hey, where are all these people we worked with last month? Well, they're dead. And now their neighbors don't want to work with you because they just saw their next door neighbor's head get cut off for working with the counterinsurgency forces.
In fact, what we were doing for all of our goodwill is we were destabilizing the area.
That's right. And chasing the enemy actually has a destabilizing effect in a lot of cases. And what we did during the surge was we decided to stop doing that. And we went in and we partnered with the population and we had a lot of explaining to do, you know, and we had to sit down in most cases almost on the first day of moving into a new area and have a discussion with the local community. And it usually went something like, listen, we're really sorry about what happened. We're planning to stay this time, and we are going to protect you, and we're going to put that first. And let's make a deal on how we together are going to protect your community. And generally the response was, we don't believe you. You know, you've come and gone so many times. How come this time is going to be different? And we would have to convince them over a period of time that this time we were serious.
How did you do that after they'd been burned so often?
Well, partly by actually getting out and living in the environment with them. I mean, we'd never really done that before. We'd had units on the ground, but we'd had this kind of repetitive raiding mentality. So we'd shoot our way in, dealing with the enemy, and shoot our way out. Instead, we actually moved into their areas and we took out, you know, 10-year leases on buildings and established these local security stations that were more like police stations than military bases. And then we started to develop a relationship with people. You know, when I went there the first time in 2006, a special forces guy said to me, I've never met an Iraqi who wasn't in handcuffs. And basically those guys had no interaction with the Iraqi population. And so the Iraqis didn't see us as people they could do business with. They just saw us as strangers who turned up in their district in a heavily armored metal box and shot a few people and left. What we had to do was establish the relationship with them and actually live in the district so they knew who we were, they recognized us by face, they actually knew our names, and we could build a relationship with them to the point where they gradually got enough confidence to start pointing out the enemy in their midst.
You've got some really telling descriptions in your book of what it was like to just move through the streets in Baghdad or another Iraqi city before the surge and then after. I wondered if you could describe that. I think beforehand you're talking about moving through the city in these very large, heavily armored vehicles in which, didn't one of your colleagues call them armored submarines?
Urban submarine, yes. Steve Miska, who was the deputy brigade commander of a brigade in northwest Baghdad and a great guy who really understood this stuff, he said to me, look, this is an urban submarine. You know, what we've done is we've separated ourselves from the people and they don't actually see us as human beings anymore. And, you know, General McChrystal, who's now commanding in Afghanistan, was also there in Iraq at the time. And he said, look, the answer to IEDs, IEDs are roadside bombs. The answer to IEDs is not to drive around in ever more heavily armored vehicles. The answer is to convince Iraqis not to plant them anymore and not to tolerate those who do plant them. So we had to look beyond the IED to the social network that was responsible for placing it and try and attack that network and reduce its ability to cooperate with the local population.
But doing that meant doing things that seemed counterintuitive. For instance, you're taking a bunch of troops and saying, okay, we're going to go through the city. It's extremely dangerous. The death toll is very high. Now, instead of sending them through in armored vehicles, you said, no, we're going to go through one at a time, just person by person.
Right. It's counterintuitive. That was my main job over there, was helping people get over that hump and helping them understand how to do it in such a way that would actually be safer, even though it seemed more dangerous. You know, I worked with one unit in northern Baghdad, which had been there for 6 months already, and they'd lost almost 50 people. All of those people, they had lost commuting to the fight. They used to live outside Baghdad in a forward operating base, a FOB, and they would drive in every morning to their working area and drive home every night. And every day they'd lose somebody going up and down the road. And they'd come to see the whole city as hostile and everybody in it as an enemy. And that just made them pretty ineffective in doing their job. And it also meant they'd get more people killed because no one was willing to help them to understand the environment. When we started to reorient, they were terrified of the idea of getting out of the vehicle and actually walking and being on the ground and living with people. Once we showed them how to do it and held their hand for one or two attempts and they actually got out and started doing it, their casualties rapidly started to drop. And they realized within a week or two that it seemed dangerous, but it was actually safer. And in the last year of their tour, they only lost two people. And both those people were killed in their working environment by the enemy, as distinct from randomly on the side of the road getting to work in the morning.
Looking back now, would you say the surge in 2007 was successful?
I would. I think a lot of people are saying, well, things are getting bad again, so the surge didn't work. But see, that actually makes the point that it did work. If you do something and the environment becomes 95% safer, which is what happened, and then you stop doing it and the environment gets dangerous again, well, that shows you that what you were doing was working. But I think the problem is that as we pull back, we are inevitably going to see a rise in violence in Iraq. But the question now is, will the local Iraqi institutions and the Iraqi security forces and the Iraqi government be able to handle that violence without our constant presence? And that's a question that we really don't know the answer to. So I think we're going to see violence go up, but we really don't know yet whether it's going to get to the levels of 2006, which might require a re-intervention.
You know, speaking to that, I want to read you a quotation from General Odierno, the current commander of coalition forces in Iraq. Speaking about the surge, he said, "The surge did create a breathing space, but to our surprise, Iraqi leaders used it to move backward rather than forward, and all the surge may have done was kick the can down the road," suggesting the surge might have been a military success, but a political failure?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm on record, and I've said this a number of times. I think that our fundamental failure in Iraq, as in Afghanistan, all along was political. We went in there without a viable political strategy. We had this so-called nation-building or state-building agenda, but we never figured out what kind of a state we were trying to build, and we never decided on how to get there in a political sense, really until about 2007 with Ryan Crocker and a new political approach. And there was a lot of hard work done by people in the embassy and a lot of, and this is not anything to do with the State Department guys on the ground, it was back in Washington. People just didn't think the problem through. And to my mind, that was a political failure. And saying, well, it was a military success but a political failure, I think it's apples and oranges. You know, the military were failing in 05-06. They were failing to deliver basic security. And we had to fix that. And that's what we did with the surge. But that's part of the problem. It's not the whole problem. We basically got ourselves out of a hole that we should never have been in the first place. And now we're back to the same old problem of how do we build a viable Iraqi state.
David Kilcullen, speaking with Anne Strangechamps. Kilcullen's the author of The Accidental Guerrilla, Fighting Small Wars in the Midst of a Big One. Kilcullen was a top military advisor to General Petraeus during the troop surge in Iraq. He's currently an informal advisor to the Obama administration in Afghanistan.